So salt of the earth and a lamp on a hill. I think this is imagery that we're all fairly familiar with. We hear it or we've read it often enough. And it's kind of an odd thing to call someone, I think. Salt and people aren't all that similar, in my opinion. I think it's a lot easier for us to understand what Jesus is talking about when he uses parables that compare people to other people in situations and things like that. But if we think about it for a little bit, I think we can gain some quick tidbits of information, or truth, if you prefer that. For most of us, I think that this passage brings really similar visions to mind. We immediately think of salt, and we know what that is. For those of you with eyes that are maybe better than mine, you can see it's just like an average, normal salt shaker. I'm sure we all have this at home. We think of this. We all have one of these on our tables. We use this salt to various degrees of frequency, but we all know exactly what it does and what it is. Table salt is incredibly common in our society, perhaps too common. That's the nursing part of me coming out. And we know what saltiness means. Our food is really salty often. When we taste something, we know really quickly if what we're eating needs more salt, has too much, or just right. And Eric talked a little bit about that already as well. And usually we use salt to make our food taste better, to bring out the flavor that's there, to enhance or improve it. And so just with that little bit of information, we know fairly quickly, or we assume fairly quickly, that when Jesus is calling us the salt of the earth in this passage, that our task is to make the world better, to take something bland and make it more exciting, more full, more fulfilling, to bring things out and increase them, to increase flavor and to increase what's good. And then we can assume that if we finish reading the passage, that if we aren't doing this specific thing, if we don't clearly show that we have some saltiness in us, some ability to improve or increase in particular, then Jesus is saying that we're unfit for use, that we need to be cast out, that we don't have a place in the kingdom if we aren't increasing or improving. We can tell fairly quickly, too, with table salt. We know when we're using it, if it doesn't do what it's meant to do, which we all know and we can all tell, then we know that there's something really, really wrong. And at face value, when we just read this passage quickly, that seems to be what it's talking about. But I think that there's another way of reading this passage. If we only think of salt in our Bibles as the salt that's the same as what's on our tables, I think we lose some of the meaning in this passage. It's a problem to think that salt, or to think that only table salt is what Jesus is talking about here, and again, comparing us to. And this is for a couple of reasons. The first is simply because, this might shock you, but personally, everything I do doesn't always make things better. Sometimes my participation in things ends up making them worse. Or when I'm lucky, it doesn't affect it at all. When I was a younger kid, probably in kindergarten or grade one, and this isn't technically all from my memory, it's a story that I've been told of what I did, which is perhaps a blessing. But my class was visited by Santa Claus around Christmas time. So we all lined up to meet this Santa and say what we wanted for Christmas. My classmates did this and proceeded as normal, but instead of doing what was expected, what most people would do, the usual sort of thing, like all my classmates had done before me, when it was my turn, I figured out pretty quick that this wasn't the real Santa. I could tell that his beard wasn't real, and I made sure that I told everyone in class that this was the case. So this revelation that this wasn't in fact the real Santa that had came to Coaldale, to John Davidson Elementary School, it didn't go over super well. This revelation really just caused crying. What was meant to be a fun and happy event to bring joy into the lives of kids around a really happy time of the year instead became a nightmare for my teachers, as I caused a lot of kids to cry. Clearly, my participation in this event didn't make it better. A less mischievous example is, and more recent maybe, is when I sing in the choir. Now, I'd like to think that I don't make the choir any worse by singing in it. Maybe some of you who stand closer to me will disagree. But overall, I don't think that my standing up there really improves the quality of the choir all that much. one of the beautiful things about choirs is that they bring a lot of different voices together to make one sound, one song. And for the Harmony Music Choir that meets on Thursdays, we're taking a bit of a break now. I'm sure we'll start up again soon when Henry has time. But that's about 40 different voices coming together. Whether or not I'm one of those 40 voices doesn't really make a difference. I don't think anyone sitting in the audience would be able to tell. My being there doesn't improve the quality of what people hear. Maybe if 10 of us decided to stop singing, you would notice, but one voice really doesn't make all that much of a difference. So there, I would say I have a neutral effect on the choir. I don't make it better, I don't make it worse. So still, I would be failing in this aspect. And if we take Jesus' words here, saying that we're salt of the earth, to mean that our task is always to make things better, to make them more fruitful, then I personally often fail at that. And I hope it's not insulting for me to assume that many of you would have similar stories to these. These are just a very small two examples of what I would consider almost uncountable examples of me failing to make things better. I just don't think it's possible for every person to always make things better. So if that's the case, are we all unfit for God's kingdom? Do we all need to be cast out? To be honest, I think that that's a bit ridiculous. The notion that we need to make the better or make the world better is a noble thing. It's a noble sentiment, but I don't think that it's always possible, especially for every person all the time. The second problem I think of assuming that salt of the earth only means table salt is that the text in Greek doesn't always have to refer to that. The Greeks have a few different types of salt, or had a few different types of salt, and a few different ways to translate the meaning of the word, which is halas, for those of you who are interested. In Luke 14, verses 34 to 35, the corresponding passage is really similar to what's said in Matthew. And it says this, "Salt is good, but if salt has lost its saltiness, how shall it be restored? It's fit neither for the land or for the dunghill. It must be thrown out." But the problem here is that table salt is never good for the land or the dunghill. Table salt, it kills the ability of land to grow things. After the Romans defeated their ancient enemy of Carthage, it's said that they salted the land around and in the city so that nothing could ever grow up there again to contest Rome. They did this to utterly destroy their enemy. They thought that table salt was so bad for the land that this was like the ultimate insult. Sorry if I just lost my place here. Oh, if that is true then, sorry, why would this passage say that once salt has lost its saltiness, then it shouldn't be put on the land, as though if it still had some of that saltiness, it should be? It should never be put onto the soil. Table salt doesn't belong there. The reason for this conundrum, I think, is that in both of these passages, in Matthew and Luke, it's the same word, halas again, and it's used, but this same word has lots of different meanings. Just as salt in English doesn't only refer to table salt, though that's often what we assume. For us, just a couple of examples, we have road salt that gets used in winter to help melt ice and clear roads and things like that. We also have potash, which is a form of fertilizer, but it's also a salt. We use lithium salt as a medicine for people who have psychiatric or behavioral disorders. So in English, there's lots of different ways that we can interpret the word salt. For the Greeks, too, they used the word salt to refer to anything that was a preserving agent. And specifically, in some cases, it referred to preserved fish. So salt could be not only something that made your food better, but it could refer to what actually was your food. It also referred to a fertilizer. The Greeks used something similar to potash, I think, that would make things grow. It also referred to a substance of some sort. It's not really clear when I was doing some research, but it was a waste or after product of salt that was used to whitewash and clear roads, or clean roads, I guess. So it was a way to provide foundations for roads and paths. And finally, the word salt here has a symbolic meaning, of being able to hold friendships together for a long time. This is because it was preserving or preserving agent as well. And so they would use the word salt to refer to people who could hold relationships for a long time. So if we know these extra things about salt that don't come up in the passage itself, how can we read it without maybe falling into these two problems? What is this passage saying when we take all of this together? I think that when we read that we're salt of the earth, meant to be lamps that shine from the hilltop, I immediately think of those sorts of people who are comfortable in the spotlight, who are always smiling and happy and positive, the kind of people with charisma and charm that draw more people towards them. But we aren't all that sort of person, are we? For a long time, I thought that to be a good Christian meant to be that kind of person. I thought I always had to be positive, excited, and smiling and outgoing. But after years of trying to be that, eventually I just realized that it was never going to happen. And I don't think that once we really get down to it, that this is what Jesus is calling us to be. Jesus isn't saying here that if we aren't this one type of thing, that we aren't any good as Christians. Just as there's many different types of salt and different uses for all of those types, there's different types of people and different uses for different people. And in my opinion, this passage is really unclear about what kind of salt Jesus is talking about. So I don't think that we need to have this sort of leader, classic leader personality that we might commonly assume that this passage is talking about. We don't all have to be table salt. And I think trying to ensure that we fit that archetype is problematic and troublesome. Instead, being called salt of the earth, I think, is a call for us to use the gifts that are given to us. All of these different interpretations of salt, they're all about doing something. They all refer to actions. We're all unique and different, and it's only really when we try to be something that we aren't that the problems arise. Here is where I find the most meaning in this text. The passage says that once salt has lost its saltiness, then it's unfit for use. Or in other words, when salt has lost that about it which makes it salt in the first place, it's unfit for use. In other words, still to refer this back to us, when we try to be something that we aren't, we lose the ability to do what we're meant to do. And for me, this is the most important part of this passage, I think. It isn't telling us what we need to do, but how we need to go about doing things, and that we do need to be doing things. To keep with the imagery of salt, this work need not only be about increasing or enhancing flavor, making things more exciting. It could be about preserving what's already there. It could be about building and maintaining relationships, trust between other people. It could be about nourishing others. But all of these refer to actions. I don't know about you, but I can't think of any types of salt that you would just put on a mantle for display. Salt is only really useful when it's used. So even when we're burnt out and used up, though, we can still provide a foundation or a part in making paths and roads for others. We can still help others to find the way, can still do something. The text here seems a little bit negative about this option, saying that once salt has used up its saltiness, then it's only fit to be trampled. And I don't think that that's a positive thing. But even being trampled is useful, isn't it? We need roads, we need paths. Even when we're used up, there's something that we can do. So there's many uses for salt, but what this passage is really getting at is that you can't use salt for something it wasn't meant for. When you try to do that, you have nothing to show for it. And I think that that's how we're like the salt of the earth. When we try to do something that we aren't meant to do, or something that we aren't meant to be, we end up floundering. To be salt of the earth isn't just to increase the number of people in our church. It isn't just to make our church a place of prosperity or have exciting music and light shows and fog machines and charismatic people, though for some churches that is what it means. Maybe that's a part of what it entails, but it's definitely not the entirety of what the passage is talking about. I think as a church together, our task is to find what it is that we're meant to be, to find a direction or an identity that fits with who we are today, and then be the sort of salt that fits in with that identity. For a couple examples, it might be the work of preservation. It might be to feed the hungry. It might be to help pave the way for others. Our slogan for a long time was to call, equip, and then send people. It may be to build and maintain relationships with those around us. It may be to grow in numbers and become more charismatic, or some combination of all of those things, or maybe something entirely different. To be the salt of the earth as Coaldale Mennonite Church, I think, means that we need to figure out what it is that our gifts as a church are and how we can use them to participate in God's work. Our church is unique. We aren't exactly like other churches in this area, or any church, really. And I think that's the case for every church, because we're composed of different, unique people. And that means that we're capable of participating in God's kingdom in a unique way as well. And I think we've done a lot of work towards this in the past, in finding who we are meant to be and how we can work in our community. But it's something that we need, and we always need, to continue to do. One thing along those lines, I think, is that we're entering a trial year with the EMC conference, and that'll help us, hopefully, to find out what kind of church we are and what we're able to do in our community and in our province and in our world. Once we know these things, then we can begin to better show God's light from the hilltop, just like the passage says. Individually, I think we need to do some discerning too. And I realized last night while I was finalizing things and getting this all prepared together that this really ties in really well with some of the needs in our church right now. I forgot to come up for the announcements, but there's still lots of opportunities for volunteering to work in the church, to join committees and do things like that. To be salt of the earth is directly followed by being lamps that shine on the hill on this part of the Sermon of the Mount. And I think that they follow each other so closely for a reason. It's because we all need to be willing to use our gifts. God's kingdom is something that we all need to work for. Salt needs to be used, or it has no purpose. It's not something we put on display and never touch. All of us have gifts worth using in God's kingdom, no matter our age, from our youngest to oldest members in this church right now. And I think that this passage is an encouragement for us to use those gifts. It's an encouragement for us to do the things that we're uniquely able to do in our own way. It's an encouragement for us to do and to be that which we're meant to be. And for each of us, that may look a little different. I'm not suggesting that everyone here needs to go sign up for a committee or to volunteer to be on church council. I'm not saying that everyone needs to help to work in the kitchens. What I'm really saying, though, is that each of us has an ability to do something for this church or for our neighbors or for our brothers and sisters in Christ around the world and in this community, and we should be using them for God's kingdom. One thing I'd like to say in closing is that salt was incredibly precious in Jesus' time and throughout much of history. It was pretty rare and really expensive. The term salary actually comes from the Latin word for salt. They're really closely connected. And I think that this is also an important part of the meaning of this passage. When Jesus says that we're salt of the earth, when we're true to who we are, to who we're meant to be, and when we use the gifts that God has given us, when we use them to work for God's kingdom, that's a precious thing for God. And so I hope as we all go out this weekend, or this week, that we'll discern what it is that our gifts are, that we'll figure out how we can use them, and then use them to pursue God's work on earth as salt of the earth and lights on a hill. Amen.